Broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan, this is Juno Afternoon on your public radio station, KTOO. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Tuksuk Noon, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today, it's a special one. It's an hour-long deep dive into Kirkutlaga, the Tlingit Russian Battles, the first Tlingit opera in recorded history, from the seed of an idea planted by Dr. Rosita Wirl to its multi-year development to rehearsal and opening night coming soon. First, we chat with Dr. Rosita Wirl, Vera Starbard, and Leslie Ishii for the story of how this project was born and the partnership between Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and Perseverance Theater. We then chat with the writing team, where Vera will be joined by Ed Littlefield, Rory Stitt, and Dr. Hune Lance Twitchell. And we end today talking about the production and rehearsal process before the big opening on Friday, September 11th. It's the Tlingit Opera here on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tak anakaya ha anikak, gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kehinak John Martin. And the word this week is got. That means sockeye salmon. And here's a sentence. Dried sockeye salmon is pretty good. Let's hear it again. Sockeye salmon. Gunesh Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kehinuk John Martin was Takdane Tan and a child of a Kagwantan man. He is from the Hunakawu and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe, Skagway, and attended Gonzaga University.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. That was just a little bit of the rehearsal music from last night, the orchestra, getting ready for the opening of Kirkutlaga, the Tlingit Russian Battles. It's the first Tlingit opera in recorded history. It tells the stories of the Tlingit Russian War in 1802 and 1804 from the Tlingit perspective. It opens on Friday, September 11th for a 2-week run at Thunder Mountain Auditorium. Tickets are available at ptalaska.org, and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and Perseverance Theater will be selling pay-as-you-can tickets for every Tlingit opera performance except for opening night. A limited number of pay-as-you-can tickets will be available by request at the Thunder Mountain entrance before performances on September 12th and 13th and 18th and 19th. And then all remaining tickets on September 20th are pay-as-you-can at the door. So opera accessible to all. This is a milestone event. Where did this idea come from? How did this journey begin? Well, today we're going to start with the seed, and I am honored to welcome to the studio now Dr. Rosita Wirl, president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, Vera Starbard, Alaska State Writer Laureate and librettist for the opera, and Perseverance Theater Artistic Director Leslie Ishii. Gunath Chi, Sha'iadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio today. Wasiati, how are you today, Dr. Wirl?
Yake,
good. That's excellent. And Vera, how are you today? Wasiati?
Very beautiful day.
It's a nice day out there. And Leslie, Gunath Chi, for being here. How are you?
Gunath Chi, really good. It's sunny. It's beautiful, yes.
It's so nice out there. It's really great to have you all here. This is a really fantastic project that has been in the works for a long time. And I want to start with you, Dr. Wirl. Where did the seed, where did the first inclination of this idea come from in you?
Well, first of all, let me thank you for this opportunity to be able to talk about our opera. Actually, you know, let me begin by saying that we had traditional operas in our culture. And we would perform them in natural amphitheaters, you know, located adjacent to our villages. Our actors, actresses would be dressed in their, I wouldn't say costume, but maybe regalia. Mm. And they would perform songs and they would tell stories, ancient stories. So it's the traditional, the opera is nothing new to us.
Okay.
But, you know, I had a research project and I was reading, listening to the old tapes that are stored in the Sitka National Historic Park. And we had elders telling stories about the Tlingit Russian wars. Mm. And there was one scene that I was really taken with. And this was that our Tlingits were on the beach. They were waiting for the Russians who were slowly advancing up the beach. And it was foggy. And I could see Katyan, you know, the war leader, the Kiksati, along with all of the other Tlingit warriors. And then there was a group of women, and they were standing by their big box drums. And as soon as Katyan saw those Russian warriors, and they had Aleuts in front of them, holding, you know, trying to safeguard themselves. But when Katyan saw them, he gave the command, and immediately the women started pounding on the drums and screeching and wailing, and the warriors, you know, were hollering, and it was just chaotic, and it frightened the Aleuts, and they ran away. So the Russians, I'm sorry to say, they were defeated by our Tlingit clans with Katyan at the leadership.
That's
so that
so
was
great.
The beginning of it.
That was it for, and then you thought, I want to make an opera.
Oh yes,
of these
yes.
stories.
I wanted, you know, that's all. That's what we're doing now: restoring, revitalizing a lot of our ancient traditions. And so I said, oh, this would be a great opera. And I was even more convinced when I went down to Santa Fe Opera and I saw it. I saw a performance in, and it's a beautiful setting there. And as I was looking at it, I could see our opera coming to life. And I have to tell you, I didn't know what it all took, but I knew I needed somebody to write it. So I approached somebody that I knew had those kind of talents. And she was also the daughter of a very good friend. And so I knew she would have a reluctant time to say no to me. So that is when I contacted Vera.
All right, we'll get to that in just a second. I also want to ask you, what will it mean for you to see this come to fruition on September 11th, on opening night? What is that going to mean to you?
Oh, I think to me it's just, it'll be the culmination of our revitalization efforts to be able to see and hear our songs, our languages performed on stage for non-natives to see and native people, because I know a lot of our native people haven't seen it. So it's kind of, to me, almost I won't say finale, but it's another milestone in our efforts to revitalize our culture and our language.
That's excellent. It's going to be amazing. It runs for 2 weekends at Thunder Mountain. As I mentioned before, you can go to ptalaska.org if you want to get tickets. Opening night is basically sold out, so you gotta look at some other dates. And I also checked the second Saturday looks pretty darn full too. So don't wait to get your tickets, especially now that the production had to move from JDHS Yedda'akathle out to Thunder Mountain. Little less seats available out there at Thunder Mountain. So Vera. Dr. Wuerl mentions this this idea that she has. Obviously, she was friends with a family member of yours, and she knew you had writing talent. And so can you tell me the story about when you first got approached for this?
Oh, yeah. And fittingly, it was actually at a Perseverance Theater opening that we were both attending, the opening night premiere of William Ink 8.5 years ago. And I was staying with who she's mentioning, Marlene Johnson. I'll say her name. She was, I didn't live here then, and I was staying with her, and I think she definitely was like, she can't say no. But I actually didn't realize she was really asking, because she just suggested, you know, wouldn't this be a great idea? And I was like, that would be an amazing idea for someone to write, like, you know, somebody, someday. And she's like, somebody should write it. And it was getting close to, you know, curtain calling. She was, somebody really should write, and just looking right at me, and I was like, do you think I should write this? What a good idea, she said. It's like, so this amazing idea that I had to write this opera, and I immediately, like, I'm pretty sure, like, before, you know, curtain went up on the play, I was texting Ed and like, what did I do? What did I get myself into? But fortunately, absolutely, like, perfect people involved, perfect story. Honestly, it's not even a story. I mean, it's our history, and it's an amazing history. So it was exciting and terrifying to sort of get that charge 8.5 years ago.
Well, they do say that what makes a great leader is making people think that the idea is theirs. So I think don't give away Dr. Wuerl's secrets here, but that's part of a great director too, right, Leslie, is make the actor think they're coming up with the idea or the opera singer or whatever. So it's kind of cool. So that is really good. Now, Leslie, so the last piece of this beginning, this seed, Perseverance got involved. How did that come to be?
Well, so Vera just referenced 8.5 years ago. Then I've been here going on 7 years. So I think it was my first meeting with Dr. Wuerl. In my culture, you come and you meet the leaders, the elders, the respected, you know, folks, officials, when you first enter a room, so to speak. So I thought, oh, and Vera and I think our board president, Joe, we came together. And one of the first things after introductions was, oh, you know, I have a proposal. I think we should have a Tlingit opera. So meanwhile, this is percolated. I'm learning now with Vera and Ed. And within about a year, year and a half later, when I got appointed to this position, I learned that I think it felt like new life for this idea, maybe to partner with a performing arts organization, Perseverance. So, I mean, I was honored already to build trust and move into this project. And I did say this, and I think I might have seen your face fall just to like what? I said, you know, the average amount of time to develop an opera and a musical is about 5 to 10 years. And I remember you going like, wait, what? Oh, Leslie, no, it's got to be more. So we're actually right in that lifespan of bringing something deeply developed to fruition.
Well, Dr. Wuerl mentioned she didn't quite know what goes into making this happen, but she saw the vision for it to happen.
Exactly.
And in the next segment, we're going to talk to the creative team. But before we move into that next segment, I want to have Leslie mention a couple of things that are happening in relation to the opera, a little sneak peek, and then also an opening night reception. Tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So this Friday, September 4th, from around 4:30 to 7:30, you know, we have First Friday. So at SHI's, I believe it's the Klan House, we'll have singers there, the principal singers from the opera. So you'll get a little sneak peek. Oh, my gosh, the voices are heavenly. So I hope you'll come and visit as you make your rounds for First Friday. And then, as you mentioned earlier, September 11th from 5:30 to 7. So you'll still have some time to dash out to Thunder Mountain at the Walter Soboleff building will have a reception. It's the prelude to the opera. And please come. It's a wonderful fundraiser. You get to hear and see some of the artists. Again, another kind of a sneak peek right before we open the opera. And then I'll share one more thing. On September 12th will be UAS and Youth Night.
Oh, excellent.
So we have a number of those folks coming from the campus. We have youth coming. So please come and support. Bring your youth. Bring, if you're a young adult, that moment of being out on the town for yourselves as a group with your friends. So, yeah, come on down. And we have student prices, and we'd welcome you. And, yeah, we run through the 20th.
Yes, Dr. Will.
Yes, I have one more thing I'd like to add is we just didn't just go to war with the Russians. I mean, there were actions that led up to it. And when the Russians first came, we really welcomed them because our people were entrepreneurs, they were business people, they were traders. And so we saw it as an opportunity to trade with the Russians. But then the Russians began to take advantage and to violate our laws, utilizing our resources and our land without our permission or compensation. And this was happening throughout the whole Southeast region. And so our Tlingit people unite. And we're organized by clans, but our 50-some clans are independent, autonomous clans. So the region, all of the clans united to wage this war. And that was a significant, effort on the part of our people, to be able to gather together to wage that war. So it was a milestone for us in our history where you saw the unification of our clans to protect our rights.
Dr. Will Gunath-Cheese for that, and that's going to lead us directly into our next segment where we're talking about the writing of this, and I'm sure Vera did some of this research. We'll learn a little bit about that in the next segment. Gunath-Cheese for being here today, helping us plant the seed of Katush Laga, the Tlingit opera that is coming to you September 11th. We're going to take a short break. We're going to switch out some of the guests here, get the writers in here, and in the meantime, we're going to listen to a little bit more of the music from last night's rehearsal. There's no singers in the rehearsal. It's just Ed working with the orchestra. But we'll hear a little bit more of that here on Juno Afternoon.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. Thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That is more of the music composed by Ed Littlefield, orchestrated by Rory Stitt. We are spending the full hour today on the upcoming Klingit opera, Katushlagau, the Klingit Russian Battles, which opens on Friday, September 11th at Thunder Mountain Auditorium. You can find full show information and tickets at ptalaska.org. And I welcome now to the studio the creative team. I have Vera Starbard, librettist, Gunath Cheesh Wasiati. How are you today, Vera? Welcome back to the second segment, continuing on. I also have Hune Lance Twitchell, Dr. Twitchell, Klingit language translation and cultural consultant for the show. Gunath Cheesh Wasiati. How are you today? Excellent. Thank you. Okay. And I have Ed Littlefield, the composer. Gunath Cheesh. Ed, welcome in. Excellent to have you here. And Rory Stitt, who just flew in this afternoon. Rory, how are you today? Excellent. It's so great to have you all here. So, it's a pleasure to have you all in the studio. This is very exciting. This opera, as Vera mentioned in the last segment, been going on for 8.5 years. I said multi-year because I wasn't sure in the intro of the show today, because I was like, how long is it? Because, you know, it's a long time to do it. So, Vera, let's start with you, because you just told us about how Dr. Wuerl approached you at an opening night of Perseverance and said, somebody should write this opera, somebody should, and kept sort of poking you and somebody, and then it was finally dawned on you that it was you that was going to do it. So what happened next after that?
Immediate text to Ed, just kind of a, oh no, not a will you, but like you have to rescue me from Will this
says,
commitment.
Yeah,
yeah. As Ed well knows, while we've now worked together on multiple projects, I love his music, and he's so able to translate story into music so well. He also knows I'm not music person. I don't read music. I was like, what happened? What did I do? So fortunately, the opera being a composer's medium, really, he took on the very hefty burden pretty quickly that he would do it.
So we'll get to that. Yeah.
And obviously, like, he's from Sitka, so we're all familiar with the Battles of Sitka. Mm-hmm. He'd also played Kafion before.
Oh.
So very familiar with the story. And it got down to, right away, Perseverance Theater, Sealeska Heritage Institute, working on how that would work, how we would write it. Really, it was just we have to start writing it and sort of look for resources on how to produce it as we go. But it was pretty quick how it started.
So, and we were talking in the first segment about how opera has been done for, you know, long time in the culture. And so where did you begin in terms of like writing the story? Because the librettist is the script, which is what you're known for doing, writing scripts and things like that. And so where did you start? Did you do more research on the Klingit Russian battles? And then how did you sort of begin to craft the story?
Yes, it was heavy research actually for quite a while, because what I didn't want to do, it's not my clan, on my clan's land that this was, and we needed to be respectful of that. There had just been a book that came out, Klingit and Russian Wars, that we heavily had perfect timing for that to come out. Read that backwards and front. There were accounts from Kekseti and Kaguantan people whose grandparents had been involved in that. So not firsthand accounts, but accounts of people who knew the people. So taking most seriously the translations of what they said in Klingit about those battles was really where the meat of this opera is. I really wanted to not focus on the Russian and American and British accounts, or even the modern accounts, but the original accounts of what happened, as close to original as possible.
And I know that one of the subtitles somewhere on the poster, it says stories from. So did you take different individual stories, like you're talking about, like you heard stories from that perspective, from the Klingit perspective, and sort of said, okay, this is what this family saw or this person saw, and then kind of incorporated that into the story overall?
strangely, even though it is a historical account or a historical story, I also wanted to be respectful, and because we're creating this piece of art, not put these things on people who didn't exist. So the actual characters involved are fictional, except for Caffeon. He's the only named sort of like person in there. But for the actual lyrics and who's singing it, those are fictional characters. But every single piece of that, including some lines they had, are taken from those Tlingit accounts. And usually I wouldn't use something unless I could see from two or three or four sources that this is what happened. So taking those factual, this happened, this battle did happen like this, the warriors did do this, the agreements, the negotiations went like this. And there's so many accounts of it that it was, you're able to really get a pretty thorough history.
Well, it seems like a perfect medium. Opera seems like a perfect medium to tell a story like this. Now, you mentioned the one named character. For those who may not be familiar, can you tell me about him?
Yes, Caffeon is a Kiksati warrior who fought in both battles. So we kind of are showcasing two battles, even though it was actually multiple battles, Battle of 1802 and Battle of 1804, and he was the war leader for both of those. And he is pretty big in as far as Tlingit communities know who he is pretty well. And we want to make sure that he and the Kiksati people had accurate depictions as well. So you kind of see the story through Tich, who's a translator, and she translates between the Russian and the Tlingit people. That was also very historical. There were multiple women translators, you know, who were involved in these. And so I sort of created a fictional character to do that. But these are all images of real people that existed and were there.
And I want to mention this. This is a good opportunity to mention this, that the creative team is all Tlingit, right? And the cast is all indigenous. Is that right?
Yes. The writing team is all Tlingit.
Okay.
The creative team for the production is much. That includes
bigger
director,
designers, and all
of
that,
designers
on
top.
I meant the writing team.
Yeah, the writing team is entirely Tlingit. So these 8.5 years have been a bunch of Tlingits batting these scripts and compositions back and forth.
Yeah.
Yes, an entirely indigenous cast. And I don't even know at this point how many Tlingit people we have involved in this. It's a lot, from Tlingit weapon specialists to Tlingit choreography to Tlingit weavers. And I mean, it's amazing, like, what is being brought together by indigenous and specifically Tlingit people to make this huge production. I actually genuinely don't know how many people are involved in this production at this point. It's quite a few.
It's a lot.
It's dozens.
And I've seen pictures of the armor. It's so cool. It's really cool. So now, Vera, you don't write Tlingit, so you had to have some help in terms of that. And so, Hune, did Vera approach you and say, you're also involved? How did you get involved in this?
Yeah, well, the three of us work on a lot of stuff. These are my favorite people to work with. And so we can't release the text threads because they would, would just be canceled by everybody. But we have a lot of fun. We relieve a lot of stress, because trying to do something like this it's stressful, because there's a lot that you could sort of, if you make a mistake, everybody's going to kind of come down on you. And these... There's a high intensity to it. And so, I got approached to translate this, and I'm always down for creative projects, especially things that put our people on these stages and on these screens and using our language and getting it out there and seeing how we can use it in really creative and fun ways. And this goes back to one of my, he would be a great, great uncle of mine, Nora Dauenhauer's uncle, Gachtlein Paul Jackson, who worked with Ed to orchestrate Tlingit music. So we're not the originators of these ideas, but we're continuing to add on these ideas. And so as the script came and then I looked at it, it's just so interesting to go from learning from all these old people and working with their translations and having them translate stuff to doing that on my own. And so part of that, there's a sadness there, because all those speakers I used to work with a lot are gone now. But there's kind of a satisfaction in knowing that
they taught me all these things. They taught me how to say these different things and to think about things in a Tlingit way, so that when you have a line, you take a look at it and you think, well, how would you say this in Tlingit? Because the language is different. You know, I come from this Tlingit perspective. And so it was a real negotiation. The translation, the interpretation was very fun, because sometimes things would be sent my way and I'll send them back and I get rejected. And so, and then, you know, it's like, okay, well, let's keep adjusting it and we'll figure it out. And then anything you do, there's bound to be mistakes. And so I'd listen to them sing, and maybe it's been 3 years. I'm like, oh yeah, there's an error. I didn't hear it this whole time and I made the mistake. And so I literally translated this the exact opposite of how it was supposed to be. And so there's moments like that, which are fun. And sometimes I joke and I say the next opera will be about how difficult it was to make an opera. And think it'll be a tragedy.
But a tragedy. But I do think, as like someone who has committed his life to, you know, the languages and being in that space, this must mean a great deal to you to be able to see this come to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, there was this moment when there was a group of us that made Alaska Native Languages the co-official languages of Alaska. And I brought the newspaper to Nora Dauenhauer, and she just cried. And she said, Dick would have loved to see this, you know, her husband, Richard Dauenhauer. And I think about moments like that all the time, where I think, okay, they didn't get to see this. We didn't get to this thing in time. But their grandkids will see it, and their kids will see it. And their energy and work is with us. And so I really want to commend all of the singers, because some of them hadn't really spoken Tlingit before. And so we come in and we say, okay, I need more, and I need more, and I need, you know.
I need more of that too, yeah, yeah.
But they're so good. Like when you listen to them right now and you think about where we were even just a month ago when we were really starting to work on this intensively, it's incredible what they're able to do. And then to bring that into their own world where they're very, very gifted singers, and then to be able to open and close your lungs and do ejectives and uvulars and all that fun stuff.
That's amazing. Well, an opera is nothing without the music part. And so Ed, Vera approached you, texted you immediately, and you were in whether you wanted to be or not.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, like when you were, where did you start? Where did you begin?
Yeah. I was six when I started playing violin. but I have actually had experience with Western, you know, classical music. So growing up, I played violin, but I also went to ceremonies and was in multiple dance groups. And so I got to hear kind of the both sides of this. And so I think my whole life has been trying to combine those two in some ways. And so the first thing I would think of is a melody to match the translations that we had. So melody is, for me, the most important thing. And I'd like to say, as I'm working on it, I would take away what I wrote on the piano and all the extra stuff, and I would just sing it with a drum to make sure it worked. So in the, you know, maybe a more traditional Tlingit style. And so I would hope that these are new songs that we will, you know, hopefully you'll be singing them by the time you get out, you know, of the show. So first foremost, you get on the computer. I said, this is a big task. I can't do it alone. So I asked Rory to jump on board, because there's composition and then there's orchestration of a composition. And I'm not as strong with that stuff. And I knew that to get this done in time, we needed a great orchestrator. So I just want to shout out to Rory, because his touch just made everything pop. It just lifted it up. So I would get there. I would write a melody for the Tlingit words and kind of get some reharmonization, so some different music underneath that. And I would usually give just a grand staff or maybe two grand staffs with some musical composition, like ideas, kind of fill out the form, and then I would send it off to Rory to get it orchestrated, and he's a wizard. Just like 5 days later, boom, you get this like beautiful thing with the full orchestration.
So you were composing to the Tlingit translation.
Yeah.
Not the, you never.
I had both. I had access to both. Okay. So we had a different format than what you see in the libretto. It was like the what Vera wrote, what the Kune's translation was, yeah. and then what Kune's translation actually meant.
Okay.
And so you had both, all three of them. Like you were saying, you know, how would a Tlingit person say this? So I had access to all three of them. And then it was just picking voice parts, like who sings what, and we picked alto for the translator and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, and I know, and either of you could answer this, I guess, but like intonation in the Tlingit language is huge, right? Because a word can mean one thing with the high tone and wholly something different with a different tone on it. So, did you have to take that into account when you're writing music to yeah. it?
And I'll let Kone jump in too, but when we sing something, it does lose the tone marks.
Okay.
So context is everything, and that's why when I was growing up, I would hear people talk for 20, 25 minutes about a story, and then that story then became a 5, 6, 7 minute song. Right. Mm. So you'd always have the context about this is the story that we're talking about. And then they would sing the song. So the song was actually shorter than the explanation of the song. And So you would know what they're talking about without needing so many all the tone marks.
I see. Is it sort of like too, Hune, is it sort of like, you know, we hear in Western culture, like, oh, when like a British person, when Adele sings, like she doesn't sound like Cockney like she is. So is that similar to what happens in Tlingit?
Yeah, it's this real balancing act where we have an orchestral piece with opera singers, and there are certain parts we're going to hear it like that is opera singing, but we also wanted it to sound distinctively Tlingit as well. But we have examples, which I think folks have already talked about today, when we go into our, whether it's a cry song or what we call shukarchuchs, like a love song or anything like that, that the tone kind of goes out the window, and it's all about matching the words to the syllables and matching it to a melody. And so we've already had precedent for that. And so those of us who have been in dance groups and who have, Ed grew up at the feet of Charlie Joseph, like a magical human being who gave us so much knowledge from the ancestors, whether that's song, language, speech, and to be able to integrate that into this it's really amazing. But it's also just kind of the next progression. Like, yeah, we take language and we take song all over the place, and to be innovative is to be Tlingit.
We're just scratching the surface here today because we only have an hour, but this is a massive project. And we're talking about the Tlingit opera, Katushtlgau, the Tlingit Russian Battles. It's going to open Friday, September 11th at Thunder Mountain Auditorium. You can get tickets and information on the show and everybody involved at ptalaska.org. And Rory, I want to bring you into the conversation because orchestration is a huge part of this. Ed's talking about like when he, if you take everything away and you just have a drum and the melody, it would still translate probably. The story would still be possible to be told. Like you could tell the story with no lights, no set, no costumes, and still have a storytelling. So in terms of, well, first, let me understand this. What does an orchestrator do? Like, let's get that out of the way for people who may not know. I don't know. So tell me what that is.
Well, an orchestrator, I guess, translates music from one instrument into another instrument or set of instruments. Okay. And so, you know, depending on what would come to me, Ed's score, then we discussed what we wanted the instrumentation for the opera to be, what was available, what kind of instruments we were looking at. And once we set what that ensemble was, then I'd take whatever Ed gave to me and translate it into something that fit that group, that utilized those instruments in an effective way, that helped tell the story, shape, tone, color, that we could get from that specific set of instruments.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you take something like Ed's composition and you're turning it into an orchestration, tell me, what is the orchestra? What do we have in the orchestra for this?
The orchestra is a small string ensemble, two violins, cello, and upright bass, and two winds, French horn and clarinet. percussion, two percussionists, and a marimba player.
And some of the best musicians in town, by the way, are on this.
Franz Vogel and a bunch
of other folks are on this. So this is going to be a bang-up deal. So what challenges did you face when you were orchestrating? Would you find any challenges in that?
Well, I think my concern was to take what was already what my fellow creative team had already developed, was so strong and robust and had such a deep inspiration within it already, was to find a way to steward that into this more Western language. And
there had to be a moment, though, where you were like, Ed, what are you thinking?
Oh, probably more than one.
No.
Luckily, I had access to Ed, so I could be like, Ed, what were you thinking?
What were you thinking here, Ed? Yeah.
I think more likely, you know, there were multiple workshops of this, and I think more often I came to going through a workshop and being like, Rory, what were you thinking when you made those choices? But like Ed said, you know, it all comes from the drum and the voice, and I think that that's how I tried to approach it and to make sure that the instruments that we were using accentuated the rhythm and the pulse as being one driving thing, and then to follow the melodic contours of the vocal lines so that it felt organic and as though it emerged from those two things, since that was sort of the bedrock of the whole thing of the music and its genesis. So I hope that we've been successful in doing that. I mean, it's a new thing, right? It's an experiment. So
yeah, absolutely. And in the pieces we've heard, there is sort of a, you know, you can sort of hear the drum in there a little bit, like in terms of like coming from a tradition, you know, the traditional clinquette culture to, you know, adding some different kind of instruments in there, in terms of thinking how that translates, because it is an opera, and so it's going to have that sort of size to it. But I love that you say, Ed, that you can strip it all away and there's still, you know, sort of the melody and the drum, and you could hear that.
Yeah, and there are moments that, you know, the percussion one and two, I mean, they each have a hand drum and they each have a traditional rattle.
Mm.
In addition to cymbals, bass drum, tenor drum, and like all these maybe more Western things.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Rory did was kind of balance the two, like which part was that? Was that a more traditional part? So do we want the frame drum? Or do we want a snare drum? You know, those kind of conversations happen all the time, and it was really cool. There are moments in the show where it's a very, like, spoiler? No, I'm not going to say it. There's a part where they all sing a kind of a very traditional sounding melody, and that's just box drum and hand drum. And that's the only thing going on, just to signify the strength of that. So the orchestra drops away and it's just like purely Tlingit. So finding places to do that and showcase those traditional instruments has been awesome.
Awesome.
Really fun. And yeah, you'll hear a box drum in there too, which is very cool.
That's awesome. So last question for you all before we move on to the production side of things, the actual rehearsal and getting it going. I'm just curious, like for you, Vera, what do you hope will be the takeaway for people? What do you hope, you know, audience walks out with at the end of the show?
I hope they come away with a sense of this beautiful emotional history, art, the power of story and art. I do think while there's plenty of history and we're going to have plenty of it for you on what the battles at Sitka are about, this truly is about just the strength of the Tlingit people, including the strength of our art and our creativity, our working together, which is our working together to do this opera and all of the people involved in it. So if you come out with the sense of, I understand the beauty of the Tlingit culture more, like, success.
Mm, excellent. What about you, Rory? What do you hope for?
I hope that, like I hope with all music, the people are moved by humanity and a shared experience. And I think this is an amazing piece that's reaching out in so many ways. And not often, I think, is asking for an audience and groups to come together that maybe don't always come together to share something like this.
Hmm. Hune, what about you?
Well, I think about the spring of 2007, we're in the Bill Ray Center with probably 10 Tlingit speakers and 10 learners in Juneau and in Sitka. This one we did Tlingit classes over the telephone, which I can't even imagine. And not like a smartphone at all. And so as I...
Now you have slideshows and pictures and like all that stuff.
When the Zoom thing doesn't work, I'm like, oh, we used to do this on the phone. But we were translating the Sally Hopkins version of the story that's in the book that we use to now, like, as a basis for this. So what I want people to take away from is to know that they're seeing the culmination of hundreds of years of work to keep these stories going, and that they're part of that movement to keep the story going and to take our language everywhere.
Absolutely. And what about you, Ed?
I hope this encourages other people to create, and this is something that we all did for generations, thousands and thousands of years. Not changing history, but taking that history and sharing it in another way. And like Rene said, Kathletk added a drum beat to songs, you know, in the 70s, so that his children and grandchildren would be able to sing in Tlingit. Yeah, and I, in a way, I'd like to think we're kind of doing the same thing. So we're taking those traditions, not changing them, but using them fully to explore another genre. When maybe you don't like jazz, maybe you don't like rock music, but maybe you like opera. And so there are many ways of listening and hearing the language and the stories.
Absolutely. And the title, what is the title? What is the title?
Kututlagau.
And what does that mean?
Kututlagau is like our fighting.
Okay, our fighting. And Vera, I wanted to ask you, we're going to talk about the production. Ed's going to stick around and talk about, because not only is Ed the composer of the opera, he's conducting the opera. So he's going to stick around for the next segment. But Vera, before we go, I just wanted you to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the questions that, you know, opera has that sort of stigma of like, oh, I can't afford it. A, we talked about that. It's pay, you can do pay-as-you-can tickets for this opera for all the performances except opening night, which is sold out anyway. But you know, I have to wear a black tie, and I have to get dressed up, and I can't applaud, and I have to be quiet. And can you talk a little bit about that and what people might be afraid of, and let's get rid of those fears?
Oh, yeah. And my husband and I definitely went to one of those kind of operas in the research for this, and we came out of it with the only thing being, we're not doing that.
Yeah,
we're not doing that. That is not Tlingit opera. Tlingit opera is, if you want to wear jeans, come in jeans. If you want to come in a ball gown, come in a ball gown. I will definitely be there. Will people be there on opening night with regalia on? Like, it's going to run the gamut of whatever you want to come to enjoy the show, to feel part of the show. If that's total comfort, come in comfort. If that's showcasing your identity, showcase your identity. I guarantee there's going to be a lot of jeans. So come comfy, come in your Crocs, come in your high heels. There, you won't feel uncomfortable no matter what you're wearing.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, the other question I do get a lot is, will I be able to understand it?
Right, it's all in Tlingit.
Yes, we will not have super titles, and that was a big decision. Mm-hmm. But one, if you were able to understand the lyrics in Tlingit or English, it's not the story anyways. It's poetry, and it might take 5 minutes to sing one verse. Really, the story is in the music primarily. It's in a musical experience, I think, most of all. It's in the movement, the dance, and the choreography. You'll see it. We will also have some scene by scenes in the program beforehand, where you can read the whole story ahead, and you'll get to hear a little bit of. I know you have Sovereign coming on next. She's our storyteller. You actually be told the whole story in English.
That will be in English before it all happens. Yeah.
So pay attention to that first scene.
Excellent. This is Juno Afternoon on KTO. We'll come back and we'll talk with about the production of the opera, which opens on September 11th. Here's a little bit more of the music from last night's rehearsal.
Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That's a little more music from the Tlingit opera, Katush Lagao, the Tlingit Russian Battles, which opens Friday, September 11th at Thunder Mountain Auditorium. You can find all information and tickets at ptalaska.org, including pay-as-you-can tickets for all of the performances except opening night, but it's sold out anyway. So we've heard about the idea, we've investigated the creation of the script and music, and now we welcome a few folks from the production and rehearsal of the show. We welcome back Ed Littlefield, who, as I mentioned, not only composed the opera, but is conducting it as well.
Yeah.
So double duty there. Yes, Gunath Cheesh, welcome back. Thank you so much. And then we also welcome in Sovereign Bill, who is playing the narrator. Or do you have a name in the show, Sovereign?
Yes, I do. It's Shanyak Sok.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're the only person in the show who speaks English, and you tell those of us who don't know Tlingit what the story is we're about to see. And then also you wrap it up at the end as well, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, precisely.
Okay. And then people may also know Sovereign better as Molly from PBS's kids series Molly of Denali, and which Hune and Vera both wrote for. Hune won a Emmy for that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And we also welcome in associate director Aaron Tripp to the studio as well. Gunath Cheesh, wasiti, how are you today, Aaron?
Gunath Cheesh, achtu yakar.
And Maddie say it was going to be here, the director, but she is a little ill. So we're let's just talk about this production. Aaron, this is a huge project, and
yeah.
Vera was saying in one of the segments that she can't even count how many people are on this production now. Can you give us a sense of, like, because you've worked in straight plays and things like that, that versus, like, a production of this size?
Well, it's completely different, because there's all these different layers that are being worked on all at the same time, like, including Ed is working with the orchestra while we're, like, working on... what's different in this one, which is that there's a lot of movement in it, which a lot of most operas do not have. And so that's this whole other layer that has been really fulfilling, but also exhausting.
So there's like multiple rehearsal rooms, like people working on music while you're working on choreography, while you're working on singing and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, there's like... singing coaching happening, the orchestra, the movement, it's all... And then it all is getting like... layered together.
I see. Wow. And then, of course, we're also talking about designers. I know we were talking about the armor that's going to... There's going to be armor in the show.
Yes. Tommy Joseph from Sitka, who's like a beautiful artist, has made armor, traditional armor for the show. And I actually went to Sitka with Maddie and one of the actors in the show, Kenny Ramos, and we like picked up the armor and got to try it on, which was really cool.
Yeah, I wish I had the photo from that trip because that was so cool to see you guys in over there in Sitka trying on the armor before
you got
on the
plane. How many opportunities do you get to try on?
I know,
like,
right?
Traditional armor.
You need that. And so, Ed, I have a photo of you here in rehearsal, but tell me a little bit about, like, going from composing to now conducting. Like, are you able to separate the two, or are they married a little bit together?
It is totally married together, you know, just because I've been living with this music for years now. So it was actually really cool to have what it is in my head now being... heard outside of my head. And so the journey was like trying to get those, the biggest journey was what Hune talked about, is the getting those and all of those sounds that we have in Tlingit sung by opera singers or singers, and how different that is from another opera. So if you're expecting lots of arias and lots of, you know, long syllables, that kind of stuff, is not really in there because we're trying to tell the language. And so that was one of the biggest things as a musical director, is to try and get them to say those, you know, say them correctly. And like Aaron said, we were, you know, we're doing music coaching. We had the principals in for 2 weeks. Then we added the rest of the chorus for the last 3 weeks. So we're just drilling on the language stuff. And Tomorrow's a big day where we have the first rehearsal with the orchestra and the singers.
Ooh, that's amazing.
The Zitzprobe. That connecting is going to be great. We also shout out to Nacho from Spain, who has been our rehearsal pianist, and he's like amazing. He's just playing the parts amazing and helping us also vocal coaching. So, yeah.
That's cool. And Sovereign, tell me a little bit about what rehearsal has been like for you. Do you sing in the show?
Yeah, I do sing in the show for a couple things, but much less than the regular cast. And so I'm on a very different track from everyone else.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I come before rehearsal, their big rehearsal starts, and stacking it in different ways. But it's been very cool because I've had some experience in acting now, and then not only is it like a huge honor to work on a Tlingit play as a Tlingit person, like learning this new style of music and seeing all these artists in their element, it's really special, and it's very, very new. Yeah,
that's cool. And do you get to speak some Tlingit in the show?
Oh yeah, no, I
for sure.
A lot, actually. I have a few paragraphs. So I speak the only English, but I also speak some of like the direct translations from some of the recounts, and those later will be sung again.
I see.
By some of the different characters, but it's a little bit of a different pressure because it's very hard to sing Tlingit in this way. But for me, it's just like I'm alone on stage and
Ooh, wow.
I'm not hiding behind music. So like I really, it's been it's been so exciting because working with Rune and everything.
Yeah, I was gonna say, had you had much work in the Tlingit language before this?
Yeah, I would say like there's words that I've just grown up on, like in my household, and sometimes it's helped me. Like I've grown up, I'm also Muckleshoot from Washington, speaking Lushootseed and learning Lushootseed there, and a lot of the sounds are very similar. But I also have some like bad habits as well from like, you know, like I've always said Duck Dane Ton, that's my clan, and like that's the casual way to say it, but it's truly like Duck Dane Ton,
right?
And so it's like
get all those the clipped and the things. Yeah, that's amazing. Well, unfortunately we are out of time for today. This is Katush Lagau, the Tlingit Russian Battles. It's a Tlingit opera, the first one in recorded history, although they've been being done forever, and it's going to be opening September 11th at Thunder Mountain. You can go to ptalaska.org to get more information. It runs for 2 weekends only, and opening night is already sold out. This is an all Tlingit writing team. The cast is all indigenous. This is an amazing project that you are going to want to be a part of. So I say Gunath Cheesh for being here today. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Gunath Cheesh.
That isn't going to be it for Juno Afternoon today. We air Wednesday through Friday right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Ak Bay 91.7. My name is Boston Christopher. I am the host of the show with help today from Aaron Tripp, who was also on the show. Have a good Wednesday, everybody.